All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today, I think I know the date actually is October 18.
Yes.
2018. So it's 10/18/18. I don't know if that means anything, but
I think this is supposed to be, or maybe I was 10/8/8 or 10/10/18. I think this was supposed to be a popular wedding date, except it's a Thursday.
Oh.
I could be making that up. That might have been 8/18/18. I don't know. Anyway, never mind. Forget it.
All right. Well, if it do mean something, then
right.
Then
Everybody should play the numbers because we still got that Mega Millions out.
900 on one, crazy. And then other joint, the Powerball's 450, I think now.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm definitely going down there.
Let me go play my numbers.
Yeah,
definitely go look at my dream book.
Right. Wait, do y'all play it numbers? You can say dream book. Some numbers came to me last night when I was sleeping. Yo, do y'all have actual numbers, or do y'all just kind of let the computer pick?
I let the computer pick.
Yeah, same. Me too.
Yeah, same. Yeah,
I don't know how.
But my granddaddy and my uncle, they did they had numbers.
They had numbers.
Yeah, or they played somebody's birthday. Like, they did all that old
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, birthday and the, you know.
I need to play
what time? What time the baby came? What time the baby came?
Look, I'm going to go down and play that today.
Yeah, something happened. They'd be like, what's today? Let me go play this date. Let me go do, yeah, that shit.
Wait, so I mean, I guess none of us would really know, but are the illegal numbers, is that still a thing? Or is that kind of wiped out now?
I don't know how it could be.
It does. Not nearly, you know what I'm saying? Like, not nearly what it was. I mean, I think New York, it was super heavy.
Yeah, I mean, niggas, that was people's, like, careers.
Yeah.
But, like, right around that mid-2000s. So, what happened was you had, like, the regular lotto, like, the really big Powerball stuff.
Yeah.
So, during that time, you still had folks playing the numbers. But when they started really going heavy in the scratch-offs and
yeah.
You were able to start winning, you know, $400-$500 with a scratch-off, it really died down on the numbers.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So you got to be, I can't imagine, you know, where it used to be maybe five number holes to a little neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, you might get one every three neighborhoods now. So I can't imagine it's like.
Yeah, the dude walking around with the little white piece of paper coming in.
Oh, yeah.
What you playing in the barbershop?
But also,
and the
if there's
line?
Not that many people playing the numbers, is there benefit in playing the numbers? You know what I mean? Because what your pot depends on participants.
Yeah, true.
You know? And I'm hoping all this, for listeners, most of our listeners, I think are Gen X or older millennials, so that I would think they would know, but I think some people might confuse playing the numbers for regular lotto, but playing the numbers was a form of illegal lotto, where basically it was run by, you know, a certain, like you said, a numbers hole. And it was just kind of like an unofficial, illegal form of playing a lotto in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
So you would put your numbers in with the numbers runner. You give them the money. So they'd be walking around with all this cash and usually with numbers in their head. Cause if they got picked up by the cops, they had to be able to show that they weren't. They didn't have no slips. So you had to kind of be a genius. And they go, you know, they put your little, and then you'd be like, my number hit, you win the pot, or whatever it was for the day.
And then all day, it would be like, so, because the numbers would come out at three. So it'd be like, mm-hmm. like 3/19, example. So all day, it'd be like, Earl, what was the first one?
Yeah.
and it'd be three, it'd be three, then like 2-3 hours later, Earl, what was the second one?
and a quick little tidbit. A huge amount of wealth was sustained from the numbers.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So a
that's
lot
how you
of your
the clubs and the
a
league.
Lot of your Negro League owners
were
number runners and funeral home owners.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And you know, that's why it was very interesting to see how when Jackie Robinson signed, how they thought they were kind of going to come along in the same way sort of the ABA got those couple of teams that came along.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And they didn't. They were basically left out in the cold, man. Yeah. So there's some really interesting characters and stories about the numbers men.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, somebody needs to do, I mean, I wonder if there's a documentary. Somebody needs to do a documentary about that. That'd be very interesting.
I agree.
And you got to, if anybody's going to do it, they got to do it pretty quickly, because obviously most of those guys are past and like their kids are not old. Like, so like the stories are going to start fading away.
I think all that backroom stuff that kept cities popping back in the day, that kept money moving, that we don't really understand that way, like especially during Prohibition and all of that. Like, that's how a lot of Black wealth was built.
Exactly. Because now when you see stuff about that era on the Black side, it's always just about drugs.
Right.
It's all like bad. Like, oh, drugs and gangs and people were killing each other. And yeah, but and they were.
Gambling and liquor.
Yeah, they were. But there was, right, a whole, like you said, there was a whole lot of wealth created from it as well that's yeah, still around to this day. You know, be like, yo, my great grandfather played numbers to be some nigga that's, you know, a doctor now, you know?
Right.
Had that wealth and stuff. So, yeah. So, you know, yeah, maybe we'll look into doing something like that.
Yeah. In the meantime, though, I'm going to go play my numbers.
Exactly. Got to go play my numbers today. I want to say peace to a couple of people. Peace to, first of all, yo, peace to the, okay, not in peace, because it's not peace, but like, what is going on with this new wave of ninjas who now think it's cool to play their music openly on the phone?
Like, oh my God. With no headphones. Oh my God. Is it like the new boombox era? Is that what it's supposed to be? It's the most annoying shit.
Oh my God. They just be on the train or just on the, like, nigga, like, I don't want to hear the new cast, you know, whatever, the new, right, whoever record. Like, I know you put your headphones, and phones come with headphones, so I know you got them.
Right. I'm wondering if it's supposed to be some new version of the Ghetto Blaster. But I feel like maybe not, but it's annoying. Is this annoying. How people felt when we used to walk around with boomboxes?
And then, probably, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And now they're taking it further because now they're having full conversations on speakerphone.
Yes, that's some old nigga shit.
Yo, that should be like bugging me out. I'm like, nigga, like, what are y'all doing right now?
But just, you know, yelling at the phone. It's not even full conversations on speakerphone. They'll be on FaceTime, but still holding the phone like they're on speakerphone. Yeah. So they'll be walking. I've seen this happen so many times. They'll be walking around on FaceTime, but they're not even looking at the FaceTime. They're holding the phone like they're on speakerphone. So it's ridiculous on like multiple levels. Like you walking through the street on FaceTime, but talking in the speakerphone. Like I don't care about, I hate speakerphone conversations anyway, because you know, old people do that too. But like but young people is usually a fight. It's usually, I don't give a fuck about blah, 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 and that nigga said, and what, like, don't, no.
Why you ain't picking him up? I told your punk ass to pick
it. Fuck you then, nigga. Fuck you. Yo, where you, pull up there. Pull up, nigga, please.
You couldn't bring me nothing to eat?
I literally have heard the pull up conversation. Well, you need to pull up then. Well, pull up. What the, and also, when did the pull up shit, let me just be on some old bitch rant right now. When did the pull up shit start? What is that?
I think pull up started maybe two years ago, but like it I don't know who started it. I first started hearing it here in Atlanta, but that doesn't mean it started here. I don't know where it started. And we about to pull up. I don't know how it started, but it actually used to be like a positive thing.
Well, I say that now. I'm pulling up now.
Yeah.
Which literally means I'm getting here. Like, I'm.
Yeah, but now pull up then turn into some negative shit.
Yeah, pull up on me. Then, nigga. Like, I'm gonna pull up on him. What?
Old New York nigga. You never had to tell nobody to pull up. You assumed the nigga was pulling up if it was a problem.
Yeah. Exactly.
You better have made that assumption.
Exactly. And be ready.
Pull up then. Go ahead and pull up. What are you talking about?
I ain't gonna say peace to all them niggas. Oh, that shit's annoying. And then peace to everybody who was seen to be so concerned about Cassie yesterday.
Oh my God.
I didn't know niggas cared about Cassie that much.
Yo,
Cassie ain't my favorite artist. Why Cassie ain't big as Beyonce as much as your niggas seem to care about her?
What's crazy? Well, there's a couple of things that's crazy. First of all, Cassie and Puffy done broke up a few times. That's A.
So let's get the backstory real quick. So yesterday it was revealed via Love B. Scott that, and I think it was confirmed by both sides that Cassie and Puffy have split up and Diddy Puffy, whatever he's called.
And have been for a while. His name
and have been Puffy. For a while. And that Puffy. Cool. Puff has a new girlfriend, a young Asian lass. I can't remember her name. Yeah, 26 years old or so. So it turned into this huge thing on social media about, you know, Cassie wasting her time.
She wasted 11 years. How she ain't getting no ring. How she got the official girl song. She ain't even get nothing.
Yeah. Now she's not. And then of course you had the Hoteps. Like, she's ruined. She's over.
God.
Ain't nobody don't want her no more. Is all that.
First of all, y'all niggas know good and hell well. If you even thought there was a chance that you could bag anything close to Cassie,
you'd go
Ventura.
Cause she's gorgeous.
She's gorgeous. But here's the thing. Cassie's like 32. She's good. She spent her 20s kicking it. She's like, everybody's talking. Yeah. Like, she's 32. So she spent her 20s kicking it. She ain't got no kids by that nigga. She ain't got no legal obligation entanglements to get out of with that nigga. Like, she's good. She got clothes. She got experience. She got travel. She got whatever else. And like, there is this huge assumption that 11 years is wasted time because it did not end in a marriage.
Yeah.
And there are marriages that do not last 11 years, right? But the other thing is, it's Puffy. That nigga don't marry nobody.
Yeah, exactly.
And not only that.
He got 6 children, ain't married nobody.
6 children, no ex-wives. And I said that. I was like, y'all criticizing Cassie like Puffy ain't got 6 children and 0 ex-wives.
Yeah.
And it's like 50, right? So it's like, where's the benefit to Cassie, aside from just Puffy being a mogul,
the lifestyle,
marrying a 50-year-old nigga with 6, who already got 3 baby mamas, who are always there, who are always, like, they always there.
They're around.
They're always around. Going to be around, right? And probably Kim flexing every now and then, just cause, right? So it's like, the assumption that somehow Cassie is bruised or ruined or stock lowered or somehow she is the loser in this deal just because they split up is phenomenal to me. And it just speaks to like marriage. Yeah. Marriage is a goal for some. It is not a goal for all. And marriage to anybody isn't always a good thing. And Puff said when he was with Kim, he said that he wasn't cut out for marriage, which is why he and Kim never got married. So, like, how do you know what they did or didn't discuss? How do you know that maybe it wasn't a conscious choice for Cassie to be like, I'm not having a baby with this nigga because we're not getting married.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't want to do that. Yeah.
Or, like, she herself was like, listen, I'm 32. Like,
she could have been the one to put an end to it. Like, you know what? Right. I'm not happy. I'm gonna move on. I mean, if I was her, if I was advising her, I should say, the first thing I would probably do is, after she kind of gets settled, is like, let's call Jacob York, because he seems to kind of have a path with some of these gals to kind of get the money like he's doing with Carucci. I don't know if Cassie's talents and Carucci's talents are similar as far as like, you know, personality and acting, but Jacob definitely can take these guys to kind of brand them and get them, you know, get them kind of on their own 2 feet, you know? So, I mean, what you think, bro?
I think niggas are just frauds. I think niggas are frauds. Like, no one, like, Cassie's okay. Okay. She will not be, there will be no shortage of male suitors looking to keep time.
Exactly.
With Cat.
Right.
Okay. And there are going to be some well-heeled people. Okay. 32. Like, she could definitely go find her one of them 48-year-old, bankers over in Switzerland.
Yeah.
And guess what? You could take her to the club and she could sit down at the dinner table with the big people.
And have a conversation.
And have a conversation. She knows what fork to use.
Exactly. She knows, she knows what side of salad come on.
Right.
Exactly. Right. So all of those things, man, all of those things matter in the world that she's swimming in. Okay. Yeah. This idea that she wasted this time again sort of harkens back to what we always see, right? We see this conversation on Twitter is that the goal for women and dating shouldn't be marriage, right? Like, we should really start to rearrange that way of thinking. But every time a long-term relationship ends and it doesn't end in marriage, the thinking is that that person somehow was cheated, that person somehow lost out. Like, what did she lose out on, my nigga? Like, and for the record, nobody Puff ever fucked with is hurting, my nigga. Like, nobody.
Nobody.
You're not going to have her up in the homeless shelter.
Nigga, nobody. Nobody. It's just like with Q. It's like with Quincy. Nigga, nobody's hurting.
They good.
Everybody okay?
And not only that, the breakups are usually amicable. Like, that's one thing I will say about Puff. Puff may be crazy. He may not be the ideal person to get in a relationship with, but he's good at keeping everybody good. Like, yeah. Everybody's gonna be around. We all gonna sit together for the sake of these motherfucking kids. Yeah. We gonna make all this shit happen. We want big, happy, blended family. God damn it. You know what I mean? Like,
she's gonna show him a level of respect. She's gonna show him a level of courtesy. And guess what, man? She's gonna get a nice little piece of coin. Mm-hmm. Okay, to make sure she's okay in her transition.
Yeah, exactly.
And she's going to be fine. Again, she's a young woman. She has other interests. I'm sure fashion folks, and I'm sure that world will be glad to accept her in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know.
I mean, the other thing is, had she married Puff and they got in divorce and he immediately started fucking with a 26-year-old, then people would have been like, she was a fool for marrying Puffy because you know how Puffy roll. So it's like, you can't win with losing, right?
You can't win with other people's opinion about what you do in your life.
Exactly. Now, what I will say is giving people some license to criticize her is that apparently almost all her posts on her Instagram page of late have tagged Fashion Nova. Cassie, just from a social media perspective, every post can't be a Fashion Nova tag post. Like, you gotta make
it. But is she a brand ambassador for them? Is she being paid?
It doesn't really matter.
Even if you are, like, every single post, like, every post.
Yeah, they're not even a caption.
Like, it's just like, It's just like at Fashion Nova. So it's like, mix it in with some other shit.
Yeah, people look for your engagement on your social media. They want to see a bit of your personality. You know what I'm saying? They want to see, you know, all of you. They don't just want to have you hitting them in the head with.
Yeah, but with the Fashion Nova shit.
Yeah, come through and buy my shit.
Yeah. Right. Okay. I also want to mention, I meant to mention this last week, but I forgot, since we're on topics that are irksome, that have gotten out of hand, the whole gender reveal shit has gotten way out. I mean, you know, some of it's cute, some of it's not, but last week in Tucson, Arizona, Macat Dennis Dickey did a gender reveal that ended up causing a fire. That burned 47,000 acres.
Jesus.
47,000 acres.
Fire.
Yeah, they say she was planning to shoot a rifle at a target containing like an explosive that would explode to reveal either blue or pink. Of course, he's a white cat. And then, and he shot at the target. It exploded. It started to spread. They couldn't put it out. I guess cause maybe the ground was dry. So he's been ordered to pay $8 million in restitution, starting with $100,000 initial payment and monthly payments thereafter. So his life is ruined.
Yeah, that's a wrap.
Like you, and you know, you can't get away from the state.
You might as well just move to Canada.
You know, they probably
revoked his passport.
Just for those reasons. So $8 million. Like, I don't even understand how. I don't know. But the gender reveal shit is just, that's a new phenomenon too. Cause you know, the whole kind of blue or pink and a powder and the balloons or whatever. What y'all think about the gender shit?
I thought it was cute initially. And I thought it was cute when people like, we want to wait, we want to do whatever. But now, because of the gram, just like prom, just like baby showers in general, just like everything, it's become too big of a production. Like the gender reveal parties be as big as the baby showers.
Absolutely.
And I think it's becoming an excuse just to do some shit. Some of them seem very cute. But my thing is, I'm not, when and if I finally do become pregnant, I don't see myself like withholding. Just, I think some people like hold back on wanting to know the baby just so they can have a gender reveal party, which I think is kind of silly. Like, just let the doctor tell you in the doctor's office. Like, it's not that, to me, it's not that deep. But then again,
everything today is for the gram.
Right. I feel like it's all for the gram. Yeah.
I was just about to say that. So it's not even just the gender reveals, which I think are just a reason to throw a party and tape and hope you go viral. Right. But like, also, like, baby showers are
fucking,
I'm like, what?
They're out of control.
What happened to showing up to your best friend's house at the living room
with the wicker chair.
Yeah, with the wicker chair, okay, and the balloons. Charlena made her good potato salad.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, Big Mama, she in there frying up some chicken.
Exactly.
Now it's like a fucking club. It's
you gotta
like,
have a candy table. Oh, can we do away with the candy tables? I'm so sick of the candy tables.
Yo, it's just it is amazing to see the lengths that people go for these parties, really just for the gram. This is purely social media. This is pure. Niggas been around for a very long time. Baby Shower's been around for a very long time.
Yeah.
Nobody was doing all of this.
Nobody.
I promise you. And I'm talking about people that had coin. People that could have afforded to do this wasn't doing this.
No.
And most of the people don't seem like they really can afford to do this. The one, man, it's like, where's the baby money? Where's the money for the baby? Because you just jerked it at the club and, you know, and all this liquor and you got a performer and all this shit.
Yeah, you like, got an ice sculpture? Like an ice
and a lot of times it ends up looking like cheap stuff that's supposed to look expensive. And that's what I hate. Like, because there are now party supply companies that have all these little metallic, they have these metallic paper cloths and whatever, tablecloths and whatever color you want. And like the little sheer curtains to go along with, and they put up like a coat wad and hang a curtain behind a table and put some glittery shit on it and put a bunch of cake pops that's the same color. And there's also like a bunch of candy that nobody really cares about too. That's the other part. So it's like,
I just want to say one more thing. Gender reveals to me are really awesome when it's your first kid, right? Like I totally understand that. Like, nigga, you got 5 other kids. Yeah. Y'all written down this. Y'all are pros at this.
Right.
Okay? Let's sit this one out. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Just keep hold this money to the side because we're going to need it.
For real.
And just keep it pushing. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't understand how this thing has gotten so big. I guess real quick, peace to, Pete Davidson and Ariana Grande, the two youngins who
peace
split
up. Peace to Ariana. Cause that shit moved way too fast.
Way too fast. Like matching tattoo.
Entirely.
She put a song about it, a song named after him on her album.
Yep.
Like, but Ariana, I'm not trying to, diss Ariana or whatever. Cause, you know, she's a young girl. She can do whatever she wants, but, a young woman, I should say. But, she seems to like, this kind of fast relationship thing seems to be a kind of thing for her.
Yeah, she does seem to green on.
You know, her and Big Sean was fast moving. Her and Mac Miller was fast moving. Her and Pete was fast moving. And, you know, Mac Miller's passing, I'm sure, didn't help her and Pete's relationship.
I think her dealing with Mac, I think the year she's had, because if you guys remember before she got with Pete, there was a whole bombing at her concert.
Oh yeah, yeah, in Manchester.
Last year. And then, you know, she's had this whole public humiliation right before Mac died with Aretha's funeral, and now people were blaming her for Mac's death because she got with Pete so quick. And I think she just needs a moment. And my heart goes out to her because she's also in the middle of like her first like real grown album cycle and has a really amazing album. She's getting great reviews for it. She's getting great acclaim for it. But also like dealing with this huge personal upheaval at the same time and everybody thinking they have a right to comment on her life. This is why I would never want to be like, give me all the money, but I don't need the fame. It's just
the fame,
like,
yeah.
Ooh, cause everybody feels that they can get in her business. And I just, my heart really goes out to her cause she's had a rough couple of years.
Yeah.
At a time when she's also like clearly at like a creative height, you know?
Yeah.
I just wanted to say one of the things that I recognize, and maybe they've had that discussion, but for someone that had seemed to really go through such a traumatic year, with all of these sort of roller coaster things occurring for her and really being put under the spotlight, as a future husband, as a boyfriend, as someone who is caring, there should be an automatic internal protective shield that he did not seem to have
at all.
And to like make her part of your fodder, to make her part of your jokes, which listen, it may have very well been an attempt to sort of steal the power, or very well may have been an attempt to, you know, get out ahead of the curve, right? But like to give her more attention, to put her in more of a situation, just seemed to really be, it was kiddie. It was a move of a dude who doesn't really understand, I think, the circumstances. And what those responsibilities to that person is, right? Yeah. Like there is a level of care and respect, I think, that comes when you fucking draw the line in the sand. Like I'm not doing this, and I'm not making jokes about this.
Yeah, and he also is like a recurring guest on Howard Stern's show. He goes in there a lot, so he's going there and talk about the whole thing. He talked about her relating to his relationship, like on the show, you know. Now, you know, Howard Stern's like at least a 4-hour show. So like they're on there like talking for a minute. It ain't like, it's like a 5-minute break. It's like, he's on there for like 45 minutes. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, answering all kind of questions. So like I think you're right, Sean. I think he didn't really understand, like, he couldn't just be so open and free with, you know, talking about his relationship.
His stardom and her stardom are not the same thing.
Right.
Pete Davidson, you know, left Saturday Night Live set and like walked to Times Square, people would recognize him, but it wouldn't be Ariana.
It wouldn't be a thing.
Okay. Yeah. Like she's a thing. And I think that he did not completely grasp that level of stardom and the cocoon that she might have been looking for from, you know, not just a man, because I don't want to make her seem like this, like this sort of dainty, you know, person who can't figure things out, right? But like people you love, you look to them for comfort and protection to the outside world.
Yeah.
And I don't think he was showing that, at least not from what I saw.
Yeah. So, you know, hopefully they'll both be okay. Bro, you got to sit this one out. I mean, peace to is the right term, but just mention this whole Tommy Lee incident, Tommy Lee from Love and Hip Hop.
Oh, I was like,
yeah, not Tommy Lee.
I'm like, Tommy Lee?
Yeah. Yeah. Tommy Lee Jones.
Like, Tommy Lee Jones?
Yeah. Tommy Lee? Yeah, no, Tommy Lee from Love and Hip Hop. I didn't realize she actually got arrested twice yesterday. So she went to her daughter's, I guess it was probably like a parent-teacher thing Wednesday night, and end up slamming her daughter. There's been no details as to how it escalated to this point, but bottom line is her and her daughter got into some type of altercation. Now, mind you, her daughter's in middle school, so it means she's like between 12 and 14 years old. She slams her daughter's head into a locker. She got booked for battery, aggravated assault, and child cruelty after the cops, you know, were called after she's going off on her daughter. She posted a $27,000 bond and was released Wednesday morning at like 5 o'clock in the morning. But she got hit with a court order saying to stay away from her daughter. And apparently she like 3 hours after getting out of jail, she was at her daughter again. So she got locked up again. So, this is, there's a lot going on with Tommy. She's prone to violence. I know down here, there's a label, Empire, who has a studio here in Atlanta, and, she got into an altercation with somebody here at the studio in Atlanta, and like she's banned from the studio. Like she fights everywhere, you know?
Yeah, she's been fighting all her life. She doesn't know how to not.
Yeah.
And I feel for her. And I believe that Tommy knows that she has stuff in her. I mean, it starts with her mom. We saw that.
Yeah.
And, you only know what you learn. She's been in and out of system her whole life. So
she got to make mugshots as Kia. Like, she got a ton of them.
Like, it literally is for her a survival tactic. Like, I think she doesn't know how else to process things. Like, literally. Because when you're a kid growing up in the system, like, that's how you get by. You got to fight.
Yeah. And, I whoop a bitch ass. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, because she was, like, in juvie. And so I get it, but I also think there's a level of Tommy that believes that, you know, based on the fact that she's got a certain profile and she's now of a certain age, like she can fix all this shit herself. Yeah. And I'm basing this completely off the show, which is probably bullshit, but I really think we know that she refuses to give up drinking. She doesn't admit she has a problem. So I think there's a certain level of still like, I can handle this, that she has, that until she lets go of that, she's not going to be able to get it all the way together. And I feel for her for that, because she's a beautiful young lady. And she seems to be sweet when, you know, everything is all aligned and on even keel. But that temper is just, woof.
Yes, it's dangerous at this point, because she's actually a grown woman, and yeah, she's on these streets, and like, you know, I don't, you know, that level of anger leads to, you know, lot of complications that can really go way left, you yeah know. So,
yeah,
I'm hoping she
kind of like her kid. Help. Like, now she might lose her kid.
Yeah, yeah, you absolutely, know? Absolutely. I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, especially since she's showing the court that she couldn't even follow court orders by staying away from the child more than 3 hours.
Right.
Like, it's like, you know, so I mean, I don't know, you know, I'm sure there's other details, but still, it's just, it's just a lot, man. Speaking of which, we might as well jump on in. Oh, wait, before we jump in, I just want to say peace to everybody who came out to my little birthday gathering on Saturday night.
I missed it. Tell me everything. How was it?
It was good. You know, it was real Harlem. You know what I'm saying?
Very.
It was old school. Yeah, old school Harlem. My man, Paul even came. Puff Love security guy.
Uh-huh. Oh, shit.
Yeah, I think he came after you left, Sean. I don't think you were going. Yeah, he came through.
I didn't know you were cool with Paulie like that.
Well, I
Branson.
I know Paul,
let me know you had jars from Branson as
yeah, Branson. Me and Branson are like friends. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was happy to see him. We talk. You know, we talk all the time. Paul, I know we're not buddies, but I think, you know, it kind of came a thing. Like, yo, Sledge having a party at Stingray.
Right.
And people just kind of came out. But it was good, man. It was a good crowd. You know. Lots, you know, obviously people I grew up with, my aunt Penny and her best friend came, my cousin, and, you know, a lot of Harlem heads came through, and people from, you know, from Jive, and, you know, my man Brian from Atlantic, and, you know, like a lot of just, you know, family and friends came, and everybody seemed to have a good time, spent a whole lot of money.
Right.
But of course, it's a cash only.
Of course.
You know, so yeah, so cash is running to the ATM at the bodega.
Cost you about $8 to get 100 out. $100
Yeah, Goldfinger came through for me and DJ'd.
Oh, dope.
Yeah. So it was fun. It was fun. You know, bought me two cakes.
I saw your cakes and I saw your t-shirts. I want a t-shirt.
Yeah. No, they weren't t-shirts. They were, what's it called?
No, I saw the little fans, but
yeah, the fans. They were fans.
And Malika had on a t-shirt.
Oh, you know what? I didn't. She made that for her then, because
a couple of people had a t-shirt with your baby picture on it. I thought.
No. It was the fan.
It was
holding.
It was the way they were holding the fan.
Yeah, the fan had my baby picture.
Okay.
Yeah. So Malika's daughter made those little, because we were supposed to have a photo booth, but the motherfuckers never showed up.
Oh.
That's why I made those fans for people to hold them at the photo booth with the hashtag. Right. It's like a Pop Life Podcast hashtag, a Harlem hashtag, and then a picture of me. So. You know, okay. But anyway, you know, it was a great time, and I, you know, love and appreciation to everybody who came out and celebrated, and it seemed like they had a good time.
Sad I missed it.
Yeah. So, you know, they want me to do another one. They want me to do a holiday party now because they made so much paper. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. Right. And also before you move on, I want to just, I know you were on like a European run.
But yeah. Well, first we went to.
And peace to Christiana.
Yes.
For her second, wedding. I guess this is really more of the official wedding.
Well, it was the official it was a traditional celebration. And because there wasn't actually a wedding ceremony part of it. There were no vows exchanged or anything like that. It was more a series of like kind of customs and it was ceremonial, but there was no point at which they stood together and did like a vow exchange. There was, and what's interesting is that even though, first of all, 700 people, and even though almost everybody in the room was Nigerian or Yoruba, even a lot of them were saying that they had actually never been to a traditional Nigerian wedding celebration. So we were there for like 7 hours minimum, but it was interesting. It was very entertaining and amazing to be part of and to watch. And it was very interactive. So there's one point at which Christiana's mom and her people are introduced in. Kind of like you would introduce the bridal party into a reception.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, welcome to Mother of the Bride. So like the Mother of the Bride had her crew, like her little group that was with her at all times. So they came in and kind of celebrated because it's a very like, Christiana's mom is the first daughter of a first daughter of a, like first daughters hold a place of honor. So Christiana is a first daughter. Her mother is a first daughter. Her grandmother was a first daughter. Her great grandmother was a first daughter, something like that.
Okay.
So first daughter and oldest child. So like, so they introduced her grandmother in. Then they introduced Louis and like the groomsmen and some other men of the family in. And then Christiana came in and it was Christiana and her bridesmaids, but like other women who were part of like a sister circle for her. And me and mom were actually supposed to be part of it. There was like a traditional, fabric that had been bought that was used for the bridesmaids dresses. And there was another color that people could take and make some custom garments. And we just didn't have time to do ours. But there was another group of women who came in with Christiana and they were supposed to represent the women of the village. And Christiana went throughout the whole venue in like this beautiful white dress and gala and everything. And what that represented was when the bride leaves her father's house for the first time, her father's village for the first time, to go to her new husband's village. And she said that the way it used to happen was that literally the bride would go from like compound to compound and dance and it would be a celebration. But all these women would be with her to like encourage her and cheer her on and keep her from being very sad and like anxious. Because again, you're leaving your father's house for the first time and you're going to this new man's house because it would be an arranged marriage, right? So they went through the whole venue, which was beautiful. And let me tell you, Nigerian people, you think black people are bad when they say, please sit down and don't get up and take pictures?
Nobody paid attention.
Nigerians don't give a fuck. Like the MC was literally like, please don't stand. Please don't block the official photographers. Please don't. And as he's talking, they all just like closing in. Every time, like he would be like, please don't stand. I'm explicitly telling you, please don't stand. They was by the end of the night. By the end of the night, it kind of got under control. So then Christiana went away for a while she was gone. There was a ceremony of the kola nut, and this was for the men in the family. So the oldest man in the family, like, kind of gives a blessing. There's this whole ceremonial thing where it's passed down by the men in the family by age and then shared with, it's like a blessing and then shared with other people. Then Christiana came back with her bridal party going through the venue. Again, this time she was performing a ceremony where she quote unquote looks for her groom. And I think I sent you guys a video of this.
Yeah.
She goes through the venue. She has a cup of palm wine and she's looking for her groom. So other men approach her and pretend to, and try to get at her. And her bridesmaids are like, no, that's not him. No, that's not him. No, that's not him. She finds her groom. They go before her father to get his permission. They share the wine. There was a whole like, simulation of exchanging the bridal dowry, all that. So all in all, it was just amazing to just.
How long was the ceremony altogether?
Well, I would say that all the ceremonial stuff, because it was broken up. Including
like the dancing, everything, was like about 5-6 hours?
About 5 hours, and then you got to the party part, you know?
So the 5 hours before the party part.
Yeah, like I said, all in all, me and mom had been there 7 hours when we left, and the party was still going. So they were probably there like 8 hours total with an open bar.
Well, of course. Yeah.
Of course.
And she told me that they did the money dance eventually.
Okay. I missed that part because
I asked her because she texted. Because
Christiana's crowd is also like a very churchy crowd.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure if that was going to.
She said it was wild paper. Wallpaper, like when they finally got to it, she said they went nuts and stuff.
I believe it.
We definitely want to say peace to her and, you know, love to her and Lewis. And we're supposed to set up a sometime soon, because I've never met Lou. I only met him at his wedding.
You know, for you to actually meet Lewis.
Yeah, to actually meet him and kind of kick it, because, you know, like, I mean, I met him at the wedding, but he's not going to remember that because he met 500 people at the wedding. You know what I'm saying?
He seems like a good guy. And I asked him, I was like, are you overwhelmed right now? Because there was one point in the night where he had to sit down.
That's kind of wild that this tells you how overwhelming a Nigerian wedding, especially like a really traditional Nigerian family like Christiana's family.
Yeah.
That tells you how overwhelming a Nigerian wedding can be, because he's Dominican.
Right. And
you know what I'm saying? And they get it cracking.
So he had to tap out.
Exactly. For a Dominican dude to have to tap out is like, okay, this is, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah, but they're going to be good. And you went to a couple of other cities while you were over there?
Well, yeah. So we stayed in London for a couple of days. Then we went to Paris. We stayed in Paris for a few days, went to Rome for a couple of days, and then came back to Paris for one day. And mom and I were kind of on like, on some super tourist shit. So like, we had like a museum pass in Paris.
Okay.
Like we really didn't shop. Like I didn't bring, and Sean, I didn't get a chance to bring you back your cigars because they didn't have it at duty free because we went from the smaller Paris airport. But we like had a museum pass for the first 2 days we were in Paris. When we went to Rome, we did one of those hop on and off bus tours. Mm. We went to the Vatican and the Colosseum in the same day.
That's a lot.
It was a lot. Like we were definitely logging 5 to 7 miles every day minimum.
So at nighttime, y'all was wiped.
Right, but the other thing was, and I was telling Sean this before we started the show, because as we were traveling between cities, countries, whatever, there were some mornings where our flights were really, really early.
Oh.
So we were like, we would come in, we would have
to get up. So y'all were doing the train, you were doing flights.
We did the train from Paris, we did the train from London to Paris. We flew from Paris to Rome and then and from Rome back to Paris.
Okay.
And because the flight is like 2 hours. But, and we were at one point going to try to fit in a day in Amsterdam, and mom was like, that's too much. Cause we did we really tried to do everything. And, you know, we did a lot of walking, obviously, and especially in Paris, we did a lot of walking.
Yeah.
But, and the first night we were in Rome, we took a pasta cooking class, which was dope. And, but ended up in a class with like all Americans.
Of course.
Which was interesting.
Because, you know, they know how to do pasta. They don't need a class over there. It's
true. All Americans. But I mean, not even like Parisians.
Yeah, not even like Asians. Not even like from the UK. Yeah.
Not even like they were all from America. And two Canadians. So that was interesting. And, we had some interesting experiences, but that Rome, I will say this, in terms of going for historical sites, Rome is dope. Like everything's old as fuck. That's cool. In terms of a city with energy, I was underwhelmed. Yeah, it's not like Paris or London where you can just walk the streets.
It's and not feel lit.
Like you're, it's not lit. Like, you know, in Paris and London, especially Paris, you could just walk the streets and just feel it.
Mm-hmm.
I never got a sense of like who lives in Rome. Like, who are y'all? You know what I mean? And there's like no black people. There's like no black
people. I heard and read that the, quietly, I guess, you know, it's that quiet now, but quietly, Italy is like a horrific country as far as racism towards black people go. Like, they're actually one of the worst. Like, they're actually, maybe the worst. Them and, you know, France definitely has a lot of issues too in, you know, in England, but Italy doesn't seem to get as mentioned as much as, some other ones for some reason, but they like, they're terrible to Africans. You know, they have a huge influx of immigrants because, you know, they're on the sea and they they're terrific. They treat them terribly. They, you know, they turn the boats back and, you know, to the ocean. People die and it's
crazy. And I can see it. And the black people that we did see, like, you know, you go to Paris and you see black communities and we, you know, you see like with London, you see a lot of African immigrants, and stuff, but you see like families and communities. The black people we did see, like we saw a lot of hustlers because in Rome, there's a really big tourist hustle, like fake tourist guides or, like at all the different attractions. There are people who will try to get you to pay them to help them get you to skip the line and do all this other stuff because the lines are all super long. So that's a hustle, or then like selling stuff, like selling chargers, selling selfie sticks, selling all that stuff. So we saw a lot of those people, but we didn't see like
a community,
like families. Like we didn't see like a black person and a wife and a child, or you know what I mean? Like, or unless they were tourists like we were. And that was a big difference between being in a Paris or, you know, obviously a London. So that was really interesting to me. That's what mom and I were kind of peeping. Like we started actually counting like how many black people do we see? And it was so few and so scarce. But yeah, Rome was great in terms of like going to see the ruins and going to see everything.
But don't go there thinking it's going to be a turn up.
Don't go there thinking it's going to be a vibe. Like Milan, Venice, like those may be different, but even me and mom, I was both like, I was like, I don't need to come back to Rome anytime soon. Like next time I come to Italy, you know, I'll want to do maybe a Amalfi or, you know, yeah, like the Sardinia, yeah, Milan, Capri, Venice, like, something like that. Yeah, yeah, Capri, like I'm good on.
Well, I've heard about Milan. I've heard that, yeah, as far as fashion, it's the, you know, number one, but I heard it's like a pretty ugly city because it's very it's an industrial city. It's
not a touristy city.
It's like they make the clothes there, they do the shows there, and that's it. And then after that, it's just back. Everybody's just working 9 to 5. So, all right, but let's keep it going. Let's talk about real quick the shop. Did you? I don't know if you got to watch it.
I heard about it.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know what? Wait, before we do the shop, let's do Cause I was thinking, well, anyway, let's do fix Ayanna Jackson's.
Oh, good, y'all didn't talk about them last week.
No, we talked about this last week, but we talked about last week, right, bro?
Yeah.
But did you talk about both parts?
Yeah, we talked about the whole shit.
Aw, damn it!
Yeah,
because I just watched that this morning. I have thoughts. Yeah, I have lots of thoughts.
They're a mess.
They're a mess.
Oh yeah, she was Monifa. Yeah, did you see that?
I saw that too. Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Monifa.
Okay.
So that was the season finale. It was okay.
Because the Braxtons wasn't a Braxton's family value. Yeah.
I think it was supposed to be hers and ended up being theirs. I don't know.
Because the girls weren't shooting.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Like, but I don't know because it's two different networks, but the women weren't, they had walked off the set except for Tracy.
Yeah.
Over the past,
and I guess the cameras that were there, I mean, I don't know, you know, bro might be understand from the production side, but I'm assuming, I guess most of the cameras and most of the footage captured was WeTV footage.
It is WeTV footage because that's who aired it.
Exactly. Right. And I guess the own footage wasn't enough to cobble anything together except because they weren't participating.
Or maybe they set it up as, I mean, maybe they must have agreed to it. Even though they set it up as a Fix My Life show, I'm assuming
it would just be great cross promotion, right? You basically just giving the Ayanna to that audience that would come in and take a look at this.
Yeah, I feel like Ayanna won regardless because she was on it anyway, and everybody knows she has a show, and they know what they were there for and everything. But we'll get back to the Braxtons, but let's real quick. So this week was the season finale of Fix My Life. They had Monifa on with her daughter. The gist of the show was Monifa, is in a space now, it seems, where she's really trying to figure out how to really connect with her daughter because she hasn't been able to. Her daughter's 26, 25, right. 26. Monifa's now 45. And she said she has not been able to really connect with her daughter as a mom. And it's, I guess she's in a space where it's really bothering her that she doesn't have a good relationship with her daughter. So I had them both on, and she kind of explored Monifa's history of she was sexually assaulted as a teenager. She was a teen mom who didn't really want to have a child. She went on and had a career and kind of like put her child on her, as a lot of people do, on her mom to raise. And she kind of popped in and out, and it was really more of a big sister. Than a mom to her daughter. Her daughter, is now, like I said, 26. She has three children. Like her daughter, I'm like, well, she's literally having kids back to back. Like she has a 3-year-old, an 18-month-year-old, and a 3-month-old. I'm like, wow, you got three kids under the age of like three?
Yeah, it's doing a lot.
You gotta chill. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, you know, that's a lot. So her daughter talked about, her daughter's very guarded. Beautiful girl, very guarded and very just kind of like puts on that happy face.
Yeah, yeah, you can tell she buries things.
She buries things and stuff, you know, and Ayanna kept digging deep to kind of find out, the history with them. And one thing, I don't know if it's an illness or something, but I was actually surprised that Monifa's mom wasn't on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because Monifa's mom raised both of them.
Right.
I don't know if Moni's mom is still alive. I'm not sure, but if she is, I'm surprised she wasn't on the show because I think she could have gave us a lot of insight as well. But one thing I will say about Monifa is that she really seemed open to this. Like she was really open to the process. She didn't come in angry and like fuck that. You didn't. She wasn't angry at any part of the show. She was very.
Well, that's why I guess to me, and this is going to sound awful, but the show, I mean, the daughter definitely had a lot of growing to do and evolving to do. But there wasn't, to me, that episode of the show didn't take me through any kind of real journey.
Yeah.
Because I still don't know if I believe they came out severely different on the other side, other than being able to acknowledge a few things, right? Other than the daughter being able to acknowledge openly that she was scared of Monifa.
Yeah.
And Monifa being able to acknowledge openly, I didn't want a child. Yeah. That doesn't mean I didn't want you. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's two different things.
Yeah.
So I guess they came out at a very good starting place.
Yeah. But there's a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
But also think that that's what happens with some of these shows, with those shows, especially like Ionis and probably, I don't even know what season, like a lot, right? 7, 8 seasons in, right?
Right.
Maybe even more. I don't know. Cause they do like two a year usually. But what happens now is like everybody kind of knows the show. And so everybody goes on there very, a lot of people go on there to be very guarded. If people like to see everybody's very like, you know, they wearing their best clothes, their hair is done, the makeup is flawless. Like they're looking at it like, I'm going on television, not that I'm going on to really fix something. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm going on and I'm not going to, basically I'm going on, but that's how I say it was a Cynthia and her sister in them. Like, it was like, I'm going on, but I'm not going on to play myself. Like, I'm going to say a little bit of stuff, but I ain't going to really go all the way there.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I think to me, this season has really been about acknowledging the very obvious and acknowledging things that are really still on the surface. I don't necessarily know that you can wrap up, you know, in a nice bow, a show that is in essence really dealing with a 20-year relationship. Like, I don't know that you can do that in an hour.
Yeah.
You know, this is a different, excuse me. There's a very different dynamic with this daughter now, who is now a mother.
Yeah.
Who is now, you know, and yeah, I mean, I think that at this point, you know, Monifa can acknowledge the fact that she probably did some things that she would, you know, change. And this young lady sort of acknowledged things that I think Monifa knows about her. I think they've all said these things to one another, but there's just no, there, like Nah said, there's a slight bit of emptiness in the fact that when they go on, there's no, there's almost like no assignment, right? Like what is there to change this relationship moving forward other than the simple acknowledgement of having done these things?
Right.
And I don't think that that's there. And that's not Ayanla's fault. It's not necessarily television production's fault. But yes, I agree. I think that people go on the show now. Listen, I get to go on the show.
Yeah, there's breakthrough moments.
Yes. And if I remember correctly, I was like, yo, Monifa had her on the R&B Diva show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. If that's the same girl. Like, this none same of girl, this.
Yeah, because Monifa only has one child.
Yeah, none of this was even remotely scratched on the surface.
Yeah, right. And that was the thing I was going to address, too. So on the R&B Diva show, the kind of the gist of the daughter coming on the show was she was kind of against Monifa marrying her partner because she was against homosexuality, because she was very religious.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was like, I can't really accept this. And, you know, Monifa was like, I really want you to, you know, be part of this. And the daughter was just couldn't deal with the fact that her mother was now a lesbian. Right.
Right.
And on this show, on our own show, they didn't address that at all.
At all. Yeah.
At all. And I'm like, again, I mean, I'm talking shit because I don't know, but I didn't see a ring or get a vibe that Monifa's daughter never said she was married. Right. And
right.
Calling her out for having, you know, children if she's out of wedlock, if she did, because it's whatever. But I'm like, okay, so what happened to all the religious stuff?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on here? Like,
well, you know, black folks' religion is
it's like, you know, it depending on the situation.
Pick and choose. Yeah, you pick and choose.
Yeah.
It's collective.
And that's a part of what I mean, right? Is that there are these things that are on the surface and easy to acknowledge, but they don't really dig past that. And I feel like they were giving up, you know, like basically the first 20 minutes of that show was really like, should have been a 5-minute intro, right? Like, because they're giving up shit that's kind of acknowledged already. So I don't know, man. I mean, God bless them. I wish them well. But you're right, Jeff. There's a sense of when people come on, especially when I looked at Cynthia and her sister, and it's just like, yo, this is like a commercial for you to like. It's almost like propaganda.
Yeah,
right. like you out here just you don't want to have egg on your face on social media about your shit, you know, being up in shambles.
Yeah,
you know, it spoke a lot to why she was reluctant and angry about Cynthia and Peter.
Yeah.
It really shone a light on that, but it also was just like, yo, you doing all of this for what exactly?
Right. Yeah.
Like you're crying about being Cynthia's sister, right? But like, guess what? You're not on this show if you're not Cynthia's sister.
And that's the only reason you're actually on TV right now.
Right.
And that's okay. Like, it's okay. But, like, let's be clear here.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was kind of a trick.
And that's why I brought up the Braxtons, only because that was the most compelling TV I'd seen all season.
Oh, yeah, no, that was great.
Even though I think Tamar, I know you guys already talked about, but I just got to say.
Oh, plus you know
Well, Evelyn's resistance at the beginning to me, Miss E's resistance at the beginning, even though she eventually came around and they eventually got to this in the show, told us a lot that we need to know about how they handle shit in that family, period.
Yeah.
And we've seen that Michael Sr. is horrible. We've all seen that on the show. So the fact that Evelyn and Michael Sr. were finally able to like tell their own truths at the end was a good thing. But I fully believe that while Tamar might have felt bad at the end, she hijacked that shit to make it about her.
Absolutely.
Because there weren't even tears coming down her face for real.
Not
all that hyperventilating. Oh my God. I was like, she ain't even crying. You know, breathing out on you, not crying. Not, I was like, not, you not found
nary,
a way.
Not nary a piece of moisture.
You realize that what nobody's dealing with nobody entertaining your shit.
Yep.
And you made this, it ended up all becoming about her.
Yep. Like
it
all by
just. All becoming, like, it went in there being about
her. That's right, but you saw Tony. Tony, it was really more Tony than the other ones. Tony was just kind of looking at the shit like, really, Tamar?
Like, y'all are fucking crazy. Yeah.
Y'all are ridiculous. Anyway, once this is over, I ain't calling you niggas.
Ayala was too, though, because Tamar was like, I'm just so, I feel so horrible. Ayala was like, where?
Whatever. This is you're making a movie here. Yeah, but we'll see. You know, next season we'll be right back at it. I want to mention just real quick because I got to because you know my married to the medicines.
Oh boy!
Did you watch this week, bro?
Yeah, man.
I'm just gonna talk about one thing on it and then we can move on. Well, two things real quick. So Contessa gets breast. What's it called? Mastectomies. Voluntarily to kind of to prevent the chance of getting breast cancer because it runs in her family. And it gets implants in place of it. And so she does that. She comes home. And it was kind of wild. They're like, so she comes home, but they haven't told their children who are all, you know, fairly young. I think the oldest looks to be maybe like 11, 10 or 11. And then there's probably another one's about like 9. And then the little one looks to be about like 5 or so. The little one is the one I said that's always like, she's a little girl, so I don't want to like get at her, but she just be doing the most like all the time. Like, please, like, Jesus Christ. So they're like jumping all over Contessa. She's literally just got home for surgery. Like, you know, her body's like, you know, super sore. And they haven't told their children. Obviously, that the contestants had surgery. They haven't really told their children anything. And so they're jumping all over her, and she's like cringing in pain. And, you know, because she's laying in the bed, and they're like, Mommy, Mommy. And I'm like, okay, at a certain point, you gotta, like, tell these kids something, because this ain't gonna stop.
Yeah.
Like, this ain't gonna stop. And, like, you're in, like, horrific pain. Like, you're like, you know. Then they like jump in and kick in and, you know, like, and that little one is yelling and I'm like, man, and the husband, that nigga seemed like he'd be like, he deal with the kids, but not really. like a little bit, but then she's definitely like the more caretaker. So that was kind of interesting to me. And the second thing was, and I've said this on the show before. So Simone's, and Cecil's son comes home from Howard and, for the summer, and they go to Simone's house, which is wild because she still has another house on the other side of town, which is still crazy to me. And they're talking, and Cecil's like, you know, unpacking his food, because Simone never cooks. So in every scene, they're always eating takeout. So they're eating, and Cecil says that, you know, look, you know, the boy Miles is home from school for the summer. We should really all be like under the same roof for the summer and moving as a family unit. And Simone is like immediately like really like, well, I don't know. Like I've been living, first of all, she let the slip that she's been living in that house by herself for 9 months. And she enjoys it. It's peaceful. Yeah. It stays clean. And Cecil's like, man, like every time we talk about trying to move as a unit, you're like you're always very negative, and you're very resistant to us really trying to figure this thing out. And, you know, she's harping on the fact that it's going to be noisy and it's going to be messy. And then they start to kind of go back and forth about, hey, well, you seem to be enjoying yourself as a single person. I see you all on Facebook, Cecil. And they show pictures of Cecil, but he's out with the guys from the show.
With the boys.
Yeah, but the boys from the show. Yeah. And they even like niggas they went to school with or whatever. Like, it's like niggas from the show. And they show her, he's like, well, you've been out partying. And she's like, yeah, I've been taking trips. And she's like taking vacations. And that, I texted Sean. I was like, that was the first time that I really was like, yo, Simone might be fucking. Because she is like really, first of all, she's a good looking woman. She's not like 80 years old where her libido is dead. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And she like I said, she's been living in this house alone for 9 months. That's 9 months of like nights to do whatever she wants to do.
Yeah. I mean, look, my thing was what was, first of all, this season, I really don't like Simone. I
peeped it last season.
I like her as a person on the show. She's entertaining as a person on the show. She's engaging as a person on the show. But when I look at her interaction with Cecil, and like, look, man, I'm not caping for Cecil. I get that, like, in all marriages, there's some good and some bad shit that comes along with all of that. But he's right. Every time they talk about doing anything where she has to come outside of her comfort zone, she's like wild resistant. Like, mm-hmm. anytime she has to cave or comply or acquiesce or do anything that is not on Simone's calendar, right? Or she has to give of herself, she seems to be reluctant. Like, your son just came home from his first year in college. Like, what Cecil is asking for is not crazy. Like, it's not crazy. Like, he's not, like, hey, like, that's what's insane to me. Like, you're upset and you're complaining about having to clean up or not even having to clean up. Having a dirty space because, okay, you guys have teenage boys that could either both contribute in that way.
Absolutely.
Or you could simply hire someone to come in and clean up. So I'm like, stop.
Yeah. That shouldn't stop you from wanting to spend time with your family.
That's my point, because I think she enjoys all of the additional things that come with marriage, like the comforts of mm-hmm. that come with marriage. Mm-hmm. I don't think she likes Cecil.
She don't.
I think she's great to have as your emergency contact. And if Cecil fell out, you know, somewhere,
yeah, she'll be there in 5 minutes.
She'll be there in 5 minutes and she'll make sure he's good. But I don't think she loves him. She doesn't enjoy spending time.
She doesn't. She's just, you know, she's doing it now because they've been together a long time and she feels like kind of like, and the show, exactly. She don't want to be quad, you know, getting divorced on the show. So exactly. She's like, I'm gonna ride this wave, but you're married, but not really.
Exactly.
Cause you don't even, y'all live across town from each other and y'all got two kind of separate lives and it's always, and if you even notice most of the time, it's always Cecil going to her house.
Exactly.
You know, so it's never her going over there. It's always them coming to her while she's, you know, chilling in the crib. So, I wanted to mention The Shop. So LeBron's second episode of The Shop came on last week. And this episode featured, I forget the girl's name. Lana Delanon. She's a professional basketball player. Elena Delladonna. Exactly. Featured Mo Bamba, who's a rookie basketball player going into the league this year for the first time. He's actually from Harlem. And I feel like there's somebody else that I'm missing on the athletic side. There was somebody else. But then the second half of the show was an interview between Drake and LeBron and Maverick. And, you know, LeBron and Drake, and Maverick have a long time relationship. They seem to be very, you know, very cool with each other, spent a lot of time together, over the years. They start to talk about, you know, Drake's career and, you know, things that he's doing and things that he's done. And then obviously, of course, they go into the Lil Wayne space. One thing that Drake said that kind of, cause Lil Wayne, the Pusha T space. And one thing, this Pusha T space was such the space that everybody focused on. One thing that he said that I thought that was interesting, and I don't know, I'm not gonna necessarily call it a shot, but I thought it was interesting that he, early on, he was talking about, I never want to be the guy, the rapper guy, who people don't want to hear. Like you get to a certain point where you like, you kind of become like the old guy. And mm-hmm. no matter what you're doing, people are like, ah, that's cool. I don't really want that anymore. Like, because there's a new person that we're kind of into. And I don't know if there was I don't know if this was a shot at Hov, or just kind of, maybe just kind of more like his thoughts. I don't know, but I thought it was interesting that he, cause most guys won't acknowledge that cause they never think they're going to be that guy, yeah. You know? And it's interesting that he's already looking down the road. Like, okay, like I've been in this a long time. Like my turn is coming up soon where I might end up being, I could end up being that guy that, you know, I'm not on top of the pole no more. And people ain't really fucking with me. But the main part of the interview was him talking about the whole Pusha T Kanye, beef. And Brian, I know you had some thoughts on that, so I'm gonna let you rock.
Yeah, I mean, well, mostly me and you, sort of disagree, right? So Drake, mm-hmm. you know, he talks about how he had, basically sort of confided in Kanye.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone was like, look, obviously I think everyone knows how I feel about Kanye West, right? Like, yeah. I think he's a fuck boy, he's a piece of shit. I'm not caping for him. But what I was fascinated by was how everyone was like, you know, Kanye is a snake. Kanye is a fucking dirty dude. And I'm like, is he though? Like, did he do anything outside of his character?
Mm.
You know, so my theory is, and I think that we've had these discussions, right, in regards to men and how we share and how we befriend people mm-hmm. and how we're able to vent to those friends. And I've always felt like I've lived by, that's not your man's like that rule.
Yeah, you don't even notice, nigga.
You don't really notice, dude. Like you're giving, and what I'm trying to intimate more than anything is that, I mean, obviously things came out after, but taking the video in context, I'm like, Kanye didn't do anything that Kanye hasn't done. Like Kanye West has literally screen grabbed and posted personal text messages from people online.
Yeah.
Like, there is nothing sacred. First of all, when you are having a conversation, I consider Jeff a real friend of mine. If I'm having a conversation with you, like I don't feel like I need to preempt what I'm telling you. As yo, this you shouldn't tell anybody. If I'm talking to you, there are certain triggers on shit that we're talking about that is completely identifiable that mm-hmm. this is between me and you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And that goes with Naeem as well, right? Like I don't feel like I need to be like yo,
you gotta be yo. Don't say nothing about the.
Don't say nothing. Right. Like nigga, once you gotta do that, that's not your man's. Yeah. That's not your man.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know this dude. When you ain't been to that house, you ain't been running around with Saint and North.
Yeah,
that's not your man like that. Like, so I say it seems to me like what Drake was going through was a dude who savvied himself and made himself out to be like the dude who could navigate all of the infested waters of rap shit, right? And Baby Mamas was a part of that.
But now, wait, are you guys talking about it coming out that Drake had a son? Because for the listeners, I stepped away for a second because Push said that 40 is the one.
No, no, no.
Yeah, but we were talking about the shop.
The
context. Previous to the 40 thing, it was Drake, you know, I was on the shop. Drake intimated that that it, Kanye snaked them. That
yes,
that
Kanye he had snaked given them. Kanye that he had given Kanye this level of information.
Got it.
And that Pusha had to have gotten it from Kanye because that's who he gave it to.
Yeah.
And so my point, I mean, again, I kind of lost my train of thought now, but I, ultimately,
but that's your not point your was like Kanye ain't your man's like that for you to even be mad at him.
That's not your man. That's yeah. not your man. Like he has shown a level of a behavior that has been erratic, that has been unpredictable. Like nothing in the past 7 years that this guy has done showed you that he was the type of person that could hold water in a cup.
Well, nothing even before that, because even when Kanye was still the Kanye everybody loves, he was always erratic. He was always like, he was always unpredictable. Well, he was always firing off at the mouth.
Exactly. So again, I think that this is part and parcel of, you know, folks, you know, looking for friendships and trying to nurture friendships in places that they ain't really natural.
Yeah. It's they're in a space that's going to be competitive, because you know, because I've said this on the show before too. At the end of it all, Ye is feeling a way because Drake is number one. He's been number one now for a long time, and Kanye can get back on top of the pile. So even though he's going to act like he's your man, deep down he wants his spot back.
Yo, so, you said that for like the past almost 3 years.
Yeah, he wants his spot back. He didn't think this run would go this long, and he would never get back on top. So yeah, he's not to be trusted. None of these other rappers are really to be trusted either, because they want this. They either want the spot back or they want the spot. The only one I think that wouldn't snake him. Who knows? I don't think at this point is Hov, just because Hov is just such a big entity I'm bigger than that. But anybody else, they're going for the number one spot.
But this is not new to rap.
True.
Niggas been stealing beats, stealing hooks.
Yes,
yo, come to the studio. Yeah. Oh, you doing a joint with so and so. That's been happening. This is no part about what Kanye did. Listen, in business, that happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Niggas lie to you every day to get information.
All day.
It's about whether or not you just accept the fact and own the fact, my nigga, that you had diarrhea of the mouth.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You was, because this is what I've always said, like dudes want these levels of friendships, right? But they never really want to admit that they need them and they want to have them, right? Like you were looking for somebody who you can, you know, talk to that you felt might have been able to guide you.
Yeah.
That's really what this was about, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
And this shit really is fucking with you because it's a hit to the image that you well crafted.
Yeah.
Like you've crafted this idea that you're like this gentleman, you only date these certain type of people, and you know, you're cut above the rest. It's like, no, you're not, my nigga. You are fucking raw like every other.
Yeah, you got caught in the fuckery like everybody else.
Yeah. So instead of just taking and I don't want to say an L because there's a child involved. So that's not, I mean, in context, like fam, this is what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Eat the L and keep it pushing.
Keep it moving.
Yeah. So, and pardon the pun, but then it comes out later on. Overall, I really like the shop show. You know what I'm saying? Like I enjoy, just, you know. I know, bro. Well, I'm gonna say why I do it, and bro, say why you don't. I enjoy that, you know, the kind of like, you know, niggas just talking shit type of thing. You know what I'm saying? And it, you know, kind of seems to be, of course, it's television, but it still seems to be kind of like, you know, loosely, you know, loose conversation and stuff like that. But why you don't like it?
I just think it's a bit of bullshit. Like the show, the initial episode, the first episode that I watched.
Yeah.
I wasn't crazy about it, but I kind of was like, okay, this is a little dope because they're all sort of sitting around and the conversation, they're all interjecting in the conversation very much like a barbershop.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't the barber. This is a talk show. This is LeBron and Maverick being able to have folks on to, you know, sort of tell their story, right? Like no one's challenging anybody. No one is. That's not what goes on in a barbershop. Okay, when you state your piece in the barbershop,
Like, somebody should have been like, nigga, you should have known Kanye was a piece of shit.
That's my point. The question should have been from a dude like Maverick is, what did he ever do to earn that trust from you?
Yeah.
That's the kind of question that happens in the barbershop. Why?
You know this nigga like that? You know,
that's your man's like that, nigga. Like, what are you doing? So I'm saying I understand it's television, so I'm not shitting on that. I'm saying that selling it as a barbershop feel and a barbershop show, and that there's this open discourse of conversation. It is not an open discourse of conversation. There's nothing about what Drake said that he did not prepare. None of that shit was off the cuff. None of that was something that he hadn't expressed or engaged in already, in my opinion. Mm. And that's fine, because I understand why people like it, and I'm not shitting. I'm not saying, yo, don't watch the show. It's just not my bad.
It's not your thing.
Not at all.
Are you checking out, or are you going to keep watching?
Oh, I mean, I don't watch. I mean, again, God bless them.
So you didn't watch this one?
I watched the clips.
But you don't watch the show.
I don't watch the show. I just think, again.
You don't fuck with them niggas like that.
I do, because I don't want to make it seem like that. But like, this particular show, it's like, this ain't really what you build it as. And I'm not interested in watching propaganda. Like, that's what it, I mean, sorry, propaganda is probably the wrong word. And that's probably too strong. But my point is like, these are like infomercials, my nigga. Like, this Pusha T, this whole shit was dead.
Yeah, that was the thing. It was like, Drake, why'd you? I mean, obviously, like, Maverick and them came off because that's the only interview Drake's ever done about the situation. He doesn't really do press anymore anyway, so that's the only thing he's ever done about the situation. So I was like, that they drew like a ton of eyeballs. I don't know what the numbers were, but I'm sure they were nice. But like you said, the fact that Drake did it kind of like brought up old shit.
It wasn't necessary, and what it reeked of was like, you know, listen, I'm not gonna get into the whole hip hop historian shit with LeBron. You know, God bless him. He can feel that way, right? But like Drake, like nigga, it ain't it. Like this idea that this shit goes as it goes. Okay, niggas talked about P's sickle cell.
Yeah.
Right. Like the game is the game.
Yeah.
Niggas talked about niggas' babies.
Yeah. The game is cold.
The game is cold. So this idea that there are rules to this shit tells me you don't really kind of understand what's happening right now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like the last few rap battles, like real battles, like that shit was very real.
Yeah, niggas died.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what are you... I don't know why he's pretending like that wasn't necessarily the case. So, and if I'm not mistaken, didn't he bring up T's wife or some shit?
Yeah, wife. Yeah.
But this is what I'm saying about the show. None of that is addressed.
Nobody's challenged. Yeah.
Nobody's challenging him. And so it is great for LeBron and them to get that. And then you watch him and it was kind of weird just watching LeBron and their dynamic and like, he's clearly like I don't know if it's a fanboy way, but like this whole I didn't want to disappoint you. It felt like the scene from Martin. I didn't mean to lie to you, Martin. I just wanted to go to Arizona. That's what it was like. Yo, is that your friend or like is that your fucking big uncle?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you shouldn't go to your friends for advice. We communicate. Yeah. Constantly about stuff, bounce things off of folks. I'm not saying that, but there was just this level of he felt like there was like he disappointed somebody that he, you know, sort of, you know, idolized it. It just, yeah, like the dynamic was weird.
He's your peer. He's not.
He's your peer. That's, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, that's, no, like, I'm sorry. And what was most important is that you felt like that disappointed him. Not the fact that you was out here just wilding or had a baby and your shit was crazy, but that you didn't respond.
Yeah. So, all right, moving on. your man Kanye in Uganda, wilding.
Oh God!
Jesus Christ! Wearing Ugandan flags, making beats in a tent in the jungle. A lot going on with that nigga. Just I don't know whatever with that nigga. The Trump shit is crazy. Yeah, he's a
Because the Trump shit, Kanye's in Uganda meeting with dictators, signing, he's at orphanages signing fucking Yeezys. And then he's got this white girl, Yes Jules, who's always getting into it with black people, you know, getting into fights with folks because she's posting poverty porn, taking pictures with a whole bunch of little black orphanages, little African orphans. It's just, it's all bad. The optics are bad. The statements are bad. He said something about how he had the spirits of, Bela,
and Bob Marley.
And Marley flowing through, like, nigga, what?
Yeah, he's your man's wildin'. You know what I'm saying? Your man, he's wildin', be selective. I don't know what's up with that nigga, man, at all. Real quick, I know I sent you these topics, Lisa, you didn't see it, but I just wanted to mention this story that's crazy, up in the Bronx, in the, I think it's the Claremont Houses projects in the Bronx.
Oh, with the rats?
With the rat infestation. Woo, that is like Jesus. Unbelievable. Like,
shit is like the other side of a Disney movie. It's awful.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Huge.
They people got videos like rats like midday. They're not even hiding. They're not even coming out at night now.
Well, yeah.
They're just coming out.
Yeah. That's when you got a real motherfucking problem, man.
Yeah, that means you got a problem with, like, you might have to, like, figure out a way to, like, you have to figure out move the people out, because you might just knock those down.
Well, like I've said, I don't know if you guys remember, like I've said to you before, like, many of these housing projects we're talking about, like, they're going on 55 and 60 years old.
Yeah, or some, older.
Some I was going to say, some are 70s. These were, a lot of these begin to be, these started to be built right after World War II, yeah, end of World War II. Mm-hmm. And so you're talking about concrete structures that are the problems that you're seeing now are really infrastructure related.
Yep.
Like the buildings are literally crumbling.
Yep.
Yeah.
From the weather, from the moisture, from everything. They just, like I said, it's basically throwing band-aids on bullet wounds.
Population increases, trash increases, rubbish increases, all of those things. So what has also happened in New York City housing is that the trash collection is not as often. The cleanliness is not as often. Right. Whereas back in the days, you would get, I know for particularly for my projects, there would be a dude assigned to your building. Your building was cleaned every day. Mm-hmm. I don't think that happens now. I think that happens more like twice a week now.
Yeah. And right? even with the exterminators.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They come randomly.
Yes. So there are just tons of issues with New York City public housing, man. And this is, you're going to see an increase of this, and there's really not much. I don't know what the next steps are, right? Because tearing them down is, where do you put those people?
Where do you put those people?
And not,
but also, for those who don't know, like, there has, over the past 6 months, NYCHA has admitted to actually, like, just being non-compliant in all kinds of different areas, maintenance, upkeep, whatever. And I think they're actually facing some sanctions now. And I want to say maybe even the head of NYCHA had to resign or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's a mess. It is.
And you know why? Because it was worth them being non-compliant. They looked at it as a cost of doing business.
Yeah.
Right.
And what that really means is that these poor black and Hispanic people are not going to, they don't have other options.
Yeah. They don't have money to sue.
They don't have money to sue. They don't have any place to go. And so we have them to some degree by the balls.
Yep.
And, you know, NYCHA's a fucking shit show. We actually wanted to redo the basketball court where we grew up and played.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to fund this privately. It was all a shit ton of red tape to where it discouraged everyone who was involved and ready to get this going.
To just do a basketball court.
To just do, In fairness, it's like an entire, it's like, we call it the Coliseum, right? So there's like, concrete seating and things like that. So we really wanted to do it over and do it nice.
Mm-hmm.
But, it was like, dude, that nobody wants, I'm not going down to Broadway for meetings, yeah. like this. It's just bullshit, man.
Yeah. So, I feel horrific for those people, like you said, because they don't have options, most of them. And, the rats, are just, the rats are basically taking over the buildings. People are getting bit at night. Kids are getting bit. Like, it's insane. Like, they had a news story. A couple guys, had rats that they guess had killed via poison or sticky traps and all that. And these rats are, massive. You know what I'm saying?
They're the size of little cats.
Like a kitten and shit. So imagine, every night you go to bed and they just, there's holes all in the back of the stove and all that, probably places that you can't really get to, and they just coming out and they just taking over.
I saw the video somebody posted, and first there was one rat on the stove. That rat moved to the side. Another rat came out and was in a pot. That rat moved to the side. Another rat came out and was in the sink. My nigga, I cannot imagine.
Yeah. That's
how
crazy.
Freaked out I would be to see that in my house. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
exactly. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night.
Those were rats. Those weren't mice.
Those were rats.
Yeah, those are rats.
I wouldn't be able to sleep at night because I'd be afraid a rat is going to come and fucking bite me.
Oh, sleep? Oh, no, nigga, that's their house now. I'm gone, nigga. Yeah, I'm gone.
I'm paying them rent.
Somebody going to take me in and eat night.
Yeah.
Horrible, there's
man.
No way.
It's horrible.
Because even with a trap, them rats will probably look in the trap and be like, yeah, okay.
Whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Give me a remote. Horrible. What y'all got to eat? And apparently they're rapidly multiplying at that.
Of course, because that's what they do. You know what I'm saying? So
horrific. It's horrific.
It's horrible. So prayers to those people, man. I hope somehow, some way.
Seriously, the stories we see, especially on some of the local news stations do the help me segments,
mm-hmm.
and almost every other segment it'll be somebody in public housing,
with some crazy shit.
My sink's been in my living room for 6 months.
Yeah.
Because they came and poured it out and then bring it back.
Every year we see the next story we're about to see. It's December. It's 9 degrees. It's a polar vortex. It's 9 degrees with a wind chill of -3 at night and ain't no heat in the whole building.
And the elevator ain't working. And the gas is off.
Exactly. So people got the stove on and shit, or they sitting there with fucking 60 blankets, sleeping in parkas. Like Sean said, the NYCHA shit is just a fucking disaster. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's a disaster. I want to mention, or end up with this Cornerstone Caroline picture, or story, rather. So this woman, Teresa Klein, who lives out in Flatbush. I don't know if she's new there or not. I don't know if she's new or one of the holdovers from back in the day. Cause she's an older woman.
Well, people say, and I'm bringing this up because I think it might be relevant to what you're about to say. People say that apparently she has a history of the shop owner said he thinks she has mental issues. She's a familiar. He knows her.
I got the vibe. It looks like she doesn't look like a hipster at this moment. She looks like a person who's probably lived in Brooklyn all her life. The neighborhood around her changed. You know what I'm saying? And she just kind of stayed there. And now she's dealing with, black and brown people, and not happy about it. So the story is that she goes to the bodega to buy some shit. And she's leaning, security footage. She's leaning over the counter, talking to the bodega guy, and there's a little boy and his mom, and I think his little sister there too. They're in the store, and they're walking out of the store, and the boy's backpack, because he's coming from school, brushes against the Teresa Klein's ass, mm-hmm. brushes, not just barely touches, brushes. And in the camera, you see her kind of look back, and the boy just walks out the store. And then the woman runs out and claims that he grabbed her ass, which is asinine, but he grabbed her ass, and she proceeds to call the police. And the boy is traumatized, because he's 9, and I'm sure he's seen stories about, what happens when the police come and he's heard stories. So he's traumatized. He thinks he's going to jail, is going to be killed. His mom is upset. His little sister's upset. It's a whole thing. The neighborhood, some of the people in the store are going off on Teresa, and she's, you know, just like, you know, holding fast to her thing. Now, I never saw, did the cops actually come?
Yeah. She called the cops. The cops came. But by the time the cops came, because the woman got her kids and was like, I'm out.
Yeah, like, she fuck should. This. Fuck this lady.
And so the cops did come, but they left.
Okay, good. So then,
what happened? The woman's on. Well, go ahead. I'll let you finish first.
Sorry. Yeah, so then, the boat, again, kind of to your point earlier, she must be a fucking nuisance because there's a whole crowd of people from the community go to the bodega. And the bodega guy lets them watch the footage. So it's almost like he's like, yeah, this is crazy. I'm going to show you what really happened. So he shows the footage and you see what happens is the boy just kind of, you know, brushes by her with his backpack. He's not even paying attention. Plus the backpack is big. He's nine. The fuck? Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
At nine, the backpacks are bigger than the kids.
Exactly. He's coming from school. And she, and so it's shown on film that, you know, he didn't do anything to her. And then she proceeds to like first for the first few days, not, even want to acknowledge that she was wrong. And then when she finally does, you know, apologize, I'm doing that with quotes. She says, well, I still want to get the mother arrested because she threatened.
Because she threatened my wife. Which, like, here's the thing. Yeah. And this is why I believe that there's something not quite all the way healthy with this woman. I want to be careful how I throw around like words like crazy and mentally ill. Cause I realize that people who actually have diagnosis find it offensive. But there's something that's not quite balanced with this woman because when she thought this boy did touched her ass, she was gesticulating wildly at the boy. Like she was just being really rude and crass to him. And nope, and you know, she sees nothing wrong with that. She said she was a cop twice. And she said it on tape because first she said she was a cop. And they were like, what? And she said it twice. So nobody's like, and I guess maybe because she didn't actually try to take action as a cop, they can't like do anything to her for quote unquote impersonating the officer. But then like now say she wants to take action against the mother. Like if anything to me, that mother has a suit against her.
Exactly.
Like that little kid's life could have been destroyed. And the one thing I am happy about is that, you know, they did a press conference with the kid and he's like, I don't forgive her. She needs help. And I'm like, that's right. Don't make that little boy.
And I love that little kid for saying that.
Yeah, don't make that little boy forgive that.
Enough with this shit. Even like, we'll get back to this story, but even the reason more, another, there's 100 of these stories now, seems like every fucking day. So the cat that lives in St. Louis, and he was going home to his condo building, and this white woman decides to like block him from getting his own building.
Yeah, she was like, I don't believe you live here.
Yeah. So finally, you know, he goes to her apartment and his apartment shows that he lives there and she's looking stupid and she ends up getting fired. But when they interviewed that guy, he was like, I don't want anything to happen to her.
No, fuck her. You know,
I'm like, yo, dude, like, when are we gonna, like, stop acting like fuck what they did? Because it basically makes it seem like what they did was okay.
Right.
It's like, I understand. Basically, you're saying, like, I understand.
And you're like, I understand. Yeah. No, I don't understand. I don't understand. Because here's the other thing. For every one of these viral moments that discourages one of these people, there's somebody out there who's actually taking it as an idea and be like, yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna call the cops. Because there was even more recently an incident where a dude was like cheering on his son at a little league game and this woman called the cop saying that he threatened the ump. No, saying that he was yelling at the ump. And my thing is like, even if he was yelling at the ump, it's a fucking little league. Like, you're supposed to yell at the ump. Like, that's actually what you're supposed to do. And said she felt threatened and she didn't know what he was capable of. And other parents were like, yo, nothing he did was menacing. Nothing he did was threatening. So some of these white people are actually becoming even more emboldened. Like, ooh, yeah, I can call 911. I should call the cops. Yeah, and some of these are doing it in hopes that like some shit is gonna pop off or whatever. But part of the problem is also with the media. Like in this case with the chick from Brooklyn, she's not doing press. Cause in fact, when one of the news stations went to her door to get quotes from her, she called the police on them.
Oh, yeah. She's a poop.
Yeah, she's a poop. But
what you think about this, bro? Is he there?
He's muted.
Oh,
you're muted, Sean.
I was very glad that young man, young boy, did not forgive her. Like, and I'm fucking sick of these funny little cute nicknames and, you know, Bodega, yeah. Betty and all of that. Yeah.
Barbecue, like, Patty.
Yeah, nah, I'm not with it. And what we're seeing now more and more is, I mean, like, it's so ingrained, right? Like, it's so ingrained. And we've talked about this before, just sort of using the police as proxy for whiteness and a proxy for their level of safety and their level of security. Like, we see this all the time. And I don't think that woman has mental issues. I think that woman is perfectly fine. It was perfectly conscious. It was very clear as to what she was saying and doing. I don't think this is the first time she's done this. I think this is because, first of all, man, like, the fact that was the first thing that came to your mind,
right,
tells me that you are, there is something intrinsically problematic in your views of black people, specifically black boys.
Right.
Yeah,
right?
That he would do that with his mother.
That's what I'm trying to say. Like,
he's nine. Yeah.
That's, so the first reaction is normally like, am I bugging? Yeah. And you would turn. And then it would be so many different things that says, okay, I know I didn't just.
Yeah.
Feel, oh,
yeah,
I thought
backpack
I,
on. Okay.
I'm, yeah, just, backpack. You know, dude, like, I'm fascinated that was her first thing. And until this is going to continue until there is a law in the books that's actually enforced, you know what I'm saying? To start fining these motherfuckers.
Yeah.
You start getting fined $1,000 a pop for false reporting crimes. And let's see how that shit works out for you.
Yeah, agreed. And I don't know why it's taking so long to do that either, because technically most cities do find people for false police reports. I don't know why these people aren't considering these false police reports.
Yes, that's the thing. That's the problem.
Yeah. Because you know it's frivolous. Like, you know it is.
You know
come
it.
On, man.
You
come on. And she's like standing there watching this shit. And I'm just like, you know what? You know what? That shit really spoke to me. Because I'm not okay. It's not okay, my nigga. Like, it's not okay. You don't get to just buy back a piece of your soul because you've been put on Front Street. Same shit with that lady in St. Louis that was blocking that man from walking into his apartment. Like, y'all don't get to just say my bad and then go about your fucking day.
Yeah, right. Not never thinking about it again. Nah, meanwhile, no. this cat, you know, then had all kind of shit happen to him at the place that he's paying, I'm sure, you know, a nice chunk of change to live in. And you know, because she said it on a film, oh, I don't feel comfortable.
Dude.
What the fuck that got to do with me?
She lost her job, right? But more importantly, like, I'd be down at that fucking, whatever that tenant meeting is, whatever that, I'd be in that lease. Yeah. Get out the fuck out of here, because now I don't feel safe. So every time I come in here, I got to think about my safety. She's going to fucking call the cops or say I'm threatening her or he looked at me funny or whatever the case may be.
Yep.
That shit is crazy, man. And it's just, yo, man, I'm so, it's so clear to me where this fucking line is drawn in the sand. It has never been more clear.
Right.
Yep. You said, so like, fuck all that forgiving and all that. Like, well, we just all need to get along and doing a press conference together. Nope. And fuck that, man. Nah, B. Fuck that. Nah, you ruined my life. You caused a lot of trauma in my life, and I'm not just going to walk away so you can feel guilt free about living your life with no consequences.
That's it.
You know? Yeah. So, well, that's it. We're going to wrap it up. We'll be back in studio next week.
Yep.
And, y'all, Thanksgiving is like tomorrow.
I know. Halloween. Happy Halloween.
The year is over.
I'm motherfucking tired already.
The year is over. Exactly. It's crazy.
Need to go to the store and buy me some greens. Start cleaning. We'll see y'all next week.
All right. Peace.
Bye.